where he stayed for a while till he got his breath back. As his heart finally slowed back to something that could pass for normal, Cat decided it was very definitely time he was getting back to the Blackthorn and safety. He didn't want Cider getting worried about him. Out in the streets of Mistport, old hatreds and divisions were forgotten as the rebels came together to fight a common enemy. Old and bitter foes fought side by side, and sworn enemies guarded each other's backs. It seemed everyone who could walk and wield a weapon was out in the streets now, fighting to defend a city whose importance they hadn't realized till it looked to be taken from them. Even Owen's foes from the old Deathstalker network had turned out to do their bit. They were businessmen, not warriors, but they hadn't got where they were without guts and determination. And perhaps, deep inside, they remembered the idealistic young men they had once been, and old beliefs and convictions stirred in them again. Neeson the banker and Robbins the landlord fought side by side, swords flashing as old skills came back to them. Stacy the lawyer had an elegant rapier, and Connolly and McGowan of the docks cut a bloody path through the enemy with an axe in each hand. They all fought bravely and well, and were surprisingly effective for middle-aged men who'd grown soft in comfortable positions.
"Damn, this feels good,"
Neeson said to Robbins during a lull in the fighting.
"Takes me back to our young days when we were going to change the world and overthrow the Empire. And all before lunch."
"Happy days. Simpler days, anyway. I was getting bored with being a businessman, anyway."
The Blackthorn Inn was a blazing wreck, its upper floor an inferno, its roof gone, swept away by the fire and smoke belching up into the night sky. Three gravity barges hovered overhead, disruptor beams hammering down. Flames licked along the outer walls, and great cracks appeared in the brickwork. Inside, there was smoke and chaos and panic. Jenny Psycho stood in the center of the room, arms outstretched like a crucifix, her mental energies the only thing holding off the deadly disruptor beams. Blood trickled steadily from her nose and ears and mouth. Under the blood, her face was deathly pale, and her wild eyes were fixed on something far away. She was dying, and everyone knew it. She was the only thing protecting the Blackthorn, and it was killing her inch by inch. Donald Royal had organized people into groups with buckets of water and blankets, ready to stamp out any fires that started in the barroom. The old man had been revitalized by the emergency and was bustling around like a man half his age. Counselor McVeigh had gathered Chance's children into a small group away from the walls. Madeline Skye, Royal's partner, stood in the doorway with a disruptor in her hand. Empire troops had already blown the door off its hinges and tried throwing grenades through the gap. Skye had seen the first one, thrown it straight back out, and taken up her position by the door to discourage anyone else with the same idea. Outside, on the other side of the street, a large group of Imperial Marines were patiently watching the doorway, ready to deal with anyone who came out of it. No one was interested in taking any prisoners from the Blackthorn. Behind the bar, Cider was getting very drunk. Her tavern was a wreck. She was trapped in a burning building, and Cat was nowhere to be seen. She hoped he was somewhere safe, but doubted it. He should have been back long ago. Probably got involved in the fighting. She told him and told him, never get involved. She poured herself another drink.
"Don't you think you've had enough?"
said Donald Royal.
"Hell no. I can still think."
"If we end up having to make a run for it, you'll be no use drunk."
"Make a run for it? Where would we go? The inn's surrounded by men with guns. The moment we leave this place, we're dead. Of course, if we stay, we're dead too. If the flames don't get us, the smoke will. Or that psycho woman will finally fall apart and the gravity barges will blow the whole place into kindling. Have I missed anything?"
"There's always the chance something will happen. Some lucky break or opportunity. We have to be ready to grab it."
Cider shook her head.
"It's too late, Donald. We're not going anywhere."
She broke off, and frowned.
Can you hear someone singing?
One wall of the tavern suddenly collapsed. The bricks just fell apart, revealing the outside street and a hell of a lot of dead troopers. Flames swept toward the gap, but were somehow thwarted and held back by some unseen force. And there, right outside, singing, were Investigator Topaz and the woman who used to be known as Typhoid Mary, the two most powerful sirens in the Empire, or out of it.
Told you so.
Donald grinned at Cider.
All right, people, we're leaving. Grab anything you absolutely have to have and head for the hole in the wall. Madeline, help me with Jenny Psycho. Cider, put that bottle down and run or I'll kick your ass up around your ears.
There were flames everywhere now. The air itself was hot enough to burn. Sudden stabs of energy smashed down through the ceiling as Jenny's shield splintered. Donald grabbed her by the arm and hustled her toward the hole in the wall. Blood was spilling thickly down her face now and spraying from her mouth in time to her agonized breathing. Her skin was an unhealthy blue-white, and her hand in Royals was cold and clammy. She looked like death warmed up and allowed to congeal, but somehow she was still maintaining her psionic shield, protecting the rebels as they fled from the burning inn. Her legs were stiff and unsteady, and Donald kept her moving by brute force, for she was beyond cooperating with him or anyone else now, even to save her own life. Her whole world had shrunk down to the simple need to maintain her shield, even though it was killing her. Donald got her to the hole in the wall and all but threw her out into the cold night beyond. He clambered out after her, his chest heaving as he tried to cough up the smoke that had got into his lungs. He felt old and tired and his head was swimming, but he wouldn't let himself fall. Not yet. McVeigh helped Chance get his charges on their feet again, and between them they herded the half-mad children over to the hole in the wall and out into the street beyond. Chance kept counting them over and over to make sure he hadn't left any behind. All the children were screaming or crying or just shuddering helplessly, Legion's never-ending howl rasping through their minds like burning barbed wire. McVeigh stayed by the hole, counting heads as the last of the Rebel HQ's people filed past him. He came up one short. He forced himself as close to the hole as he could and stared through the flames into the blazing barroom. The dwarf Ian Castle was still sitting beside Lois Baron's body, crushed under the fallen timber. He was holding her dead hand in his and rocking slowly back and forth. McVeigh yelled his name, and Castle looked around almost absently.
Ian, get out of there! Leave her! There's nothing you can do!
McVeigh had to yell himself hoarse to make himself heard above the roar of the flames and the thundering engines of the gravity barges hovering overhead.
I won't leave her. I won't leave her here.
She's already gone! And if you don't get out of there now, you'll be going with her!
McVeigh made himself stay by the hole, though the sheer heat was raising blisters on his unprotected hands and face.
Ian, please! I don't want to lose you too!
Castle nodded slowly, got to his feet, and stumbled across the smoke-filled room to the hole in the wall. He plowed straight through the fiery sides as though he didn't notice them, and lurched out into the street with flames rising from his clothes. McVeigh whipped off his cloak and wrapped Castle up in it, smothering the flames. Beside him, Jenny Psycho sat down suddenly, as though all the strength had just gone out of her. Her mouth was slack, and her eyes saw nothing. Not far away, Typhoid Mary and Investigator Topaz were still singing together, their voices and asp combining to create a shield over and around the rebels. Their voices rose and fell in studied harmonies, and a psi storm of energies crackled through the streets at their command, keeping the Empire forces at bay. Donald Royal looked around suddenly as he realized his partner hadn't come out with him. People were milling back and forth all around him, but there was no sign anywhere of Madeline Skye. He pushed his way through the crowd and grabbed McVeigh by the arm.
Where's Madeline? Didn't she come out with you?
I didn't see her. I had my own problems.
McVeigh pulled his arm away, and Donald was left staring at the burning Blackthorn Inn. He moved toward the hole in the wall, screwing up his face against the blazing heat. The barroom was now a sea of flames, and thick black smoke boiled out of the hole. Donald's heart contracted painfully as he realized she must still be in there, probably lost and disoriented in the smoke. He called her name again and again, but there was no answer. Donald's mouth firmed. He knew what he had to do. He pulled his cloak up to protect his face and moved toward the hole in the wall. But he stopped after only a few steps. The heat was just too much for him. He tried again and again, drawing on all his courage and resolution to force him past the flames, but his old body cringed back from the awful heat despite him and would not go forward. Flames licked up around his cloak as the material caught fire, and suddenly hands pulled him back, slapping at his shoulders to put out the flames. Donald fought the hands savagely.
Let me go, damn it! Madeline's still in there!
If she is, then she's dead.
Donald stopped struggling.
If she's dead, then I want to die too. She was my daughter, in every way that mattered. She's all I had left.
You can't die here. You're needed. You're a counselor, an old and respected warrior whose name will still rally people. Don't you dare give up on me now. You've been telling us all what a hero you used to be for years. Now prove it, damn it. Prove it in a way that matters. You can't get back in there. No one could.
I could have. Once. When I was a hero. When I was young.
And then one of the windows shattered as a body came hurtling through it. It hit the cobbled street rolling and stood up, throwing aside a blazing cloak. Madeline Skye beat at her smoldering clothes with her hands, blackened and scorched, but still very much alive. Donald lurched forward to take her in his arms, and she held him tightly to her.
I got turned around in the fire and the smoke. Didn't know where the hell I was, let alone the hole. Then I heard you calling me. You got me out, Donald. I owe you one.
No, you don't. Your family.
Cider stood off by herself, a bottle of the good brandy still in her hand, and watched the Blackthorn burn. It had been her home and her safe haven, and the repository of her dreams. But her face remained calm and cold. Her eyes were dry, and her mouth was firm. Cider didn't believe in being beaten.
My lovely tavern. You were going to make me rich, rich, rich.
Jenny Psycho collapsed. Her strength had finally run out. Determination and willpower could carry her no farther, and her mind shut down. The psionic shield disappeared, and the disruptor beams from the hovering gravity barges slammed down into the tavern like God-driving nails. The building burst apart, the ceiling crashing down as the walls collapsed, and the flames roared up in triumph. Mary and Topaz's song protected the small crowd from the fire and the flying debris. In seconds, there was nothing left of the Blackthorn but a blackened frame in an inferno of flames. Steele knelt down beside Jenny, checked for a pulse, and raised an eyebrow.
Amazing. She's still with us. Chance, get her out of here. Take her and your children to the Esper Union Hall. They'll look after you. And they'll save Jenny Psycho if anyone can. Crazy woman. Bravest damn thing I ever saw.
He got to his feet and raised his voice above the din.
All right, everybody scatter. You all know the secondary meeting place. Be there in an hour. No excuses. Now move it!
And so they all went their separate ways, helping those who needed it, carrying a few where necessary. They went in twos and threes, following the routes the council had worked out earlier, just in case. They disappeared into the dark maze of narrow streets and alleyways, confident no Empire forces could follow them and not be hopelessly lost in moments. There was no talk of surrender. They were not broken, not beaten. And they had always known this was a fight to the death. Soon they were all gone, apart from Typhoid Mary and Investigator Topaz. Their song still crackled around them, drowning out Legion's howl, keeping the troops at bay and covering their friend's escape. They were the two most powerful sirens the Empire had ever produced, and they would not yield. And then, suddenly, the pressure eased. The gravity barges moved on, their work done, and the troops fell back. Topaz and Mary stopped singing, conserving their strength. The world around them was still a chaos of flames and screams and battle cries, the thunder of gravity engines and the roar of collapsing buildings, but their particular part of the world seemed strangely still and quiet, as though some new force had entered the scene. Topaz and Mary looked at each other. Behind them, someone applauded slowly. They both looked round sharply to find a tall, dark man in an investigator's cloak studying them calmly from the other side of the street. Topaz frowned. She should have heard him approach, even in all this noise and chaos. She should have known he was there. His sword and gun were still sheathed on his hips, but in one hand he held a length of steel chain, on the other end of which crouched a cowering, naked man. He was painfully thin and smeared with filth, and his bare skin clearly showed the scars and marks of many beatings. The left side of his skull had been surgically cut away to reveal the brain beneath, protected only by a clear piece of steel glass. Various plugs and jacks studded the brain tissues, and silver wires gleamed in the gray meat.
"Handsome fellow, isn't he?"
said the dark man.
"He belongs to me. Investigator Razor at your service. I've been sent to bring you back into the fold of the Empire, teach you to sing the right songs again. Spare me your protestations, please. They don't matter. You have no say in things anymore. This unpleasant wretch at my side has no name anymore, only a function. He's a living S-blocker, one of the Lord High Dram's special projects, I believe. Being alive and capable of following orders, he's much more powerful and versatile than the usual brain-in-a-box S-blocker. He's strong enough to function even under Legion's influence, and subtle enough that you didn't even notice our approach. I'm afraid you'll find your songs have quite deserted you now, ladies. So put aside your petty complaints and come with me. Your life in this place is over. You belong to the Empire again."
Topaz drew her sword.
"I'd rather die."
Razor drew his sword.
"That can be arranged. I get a bonus if I bring you both back alive, but money's never been that important to me. They'll settle for one live siren and one dead traitor if need be. And I always wanted to know which of us is better."
He dropped the length of chain he was holding, but the living S-blocker stayed where he was. He would not move without orders. Typhoid Mary backed away from the investigator, shaking her head.
"I can't help you, Topaz. I'm sorry. I won't kill again. Not for any reason."
"That's all right."
Topaz advanced on Razor.
"Just keep well back. You don't want to get any of his blood on you."
And then Topaz and Razor surged forward and slammed together, sparks flying in the mists and smoke as their swords clashed. They stamped and lunged, swinging their swords with almost inhuman strength and speed. Two investigators trained to the peak of perfection. They circled around each other, hammering home blows that would have swept away a lesser fighter's defenses, probing for each other's weaknesses. They were strong and fast and quite magnificent, and neither of them would yield an inch. But in the end, Razor was much the older of the two, and he was not fueled by the raw hatred and need for revenge that burned so fiercely in Topaz's veins. Slowly, remorselessly, foot by foot, she drove him back, forcing him on the defensive, and Razor knew that he was very near to death. His pride kept him in the fight longer than he should have been, but the pain and blood of his first few wounds brought him to his senses again. He forced the last of his energy into a flurry of blows that turned Topaz around till her back was to Mary, and then he raised his voice in a commanding shout.
"Mary! Cold Delta 3! kill Topaz!
Mary swayed sickly as the pre-programmed control words hit her. The Esper Union had done their best to remove all traces of the Empire's conditioning, but some things had been buried so deeply that only another mind tech could have found them. Mary screamed as the mind tech's programming took hold again, sweeping aside her mind and wishes in favor of the old, conditioned Typhoid Mary. Her face went slack, and someone else peered out of her eyes. And even as Topaz realized what was happening, Typhoid Mary stepped forward and hit her across the back of the neck with trained professional force. Topaz fell to her knees, her thoughts darkening, her sword slipping from nerveless fingers. Mary leaned over and hit her again, and Topaz fell forward to lie still in the churned-up snow. Razor stood for a moment, getting his breathing back under control, and then he put away his sword and leaned over Topaz. He checked the pulse in her neck and frowned. He looked up at Mary.
She's still alive. I told you to kill her.
I can't. Not anymore.
Obey me. Kill Investigator Topaz.
Mary trembled violently, but made no move toward Topaz. Two absolutes warred in her mind, neither side giving in. Razor sighed and shook his head.
Don't worry, Mary. They'll break you again. And then you'll kill anyone we want you to, and smile while you do it. As for Topaz, we'll just say the bitch died in the fight.
He put his hand to his sword, when a steel ball from Cat's slingshot hit him right between the eyes. Razor's head snapped back, his eyes rolling up, and he fell backwards to lie twitching in the snow. Cat dropped silently down out of the darkness and hurried over to Topaz's side. He shook her shoulder urgently, but she didn't respond. Cat scowled unhappily. It was obvious she needed more help than he could give her. Someone tugged at his sleeve, and Cat spun round to find the naked man crouching at his side.
Please, please, kill me. Don't let me live like this.
Cat drew his knife and thrust it into the man's heart. The naked man jerked and tried to smile at Cat. Blood welled from his mouth. Cat pulled the knife free, and the S-blocker fell forward into the snow and lay still. Cat looked from Topaz to Mary and back again. He couldn't save both of them. And while Topaz wasn't exactly his friend, he trusted her a damn sight more than Typhoid Mary. She tried to kill him once when she first came to Mistport, and with her conditioning reawakened, there was no telling what she might do. And so, with only the smallest of regrets, Cat turned his back on Mary, hoisted Topaz over his shoulder, and disappeared back into the concealing shadows. Razor slowly sat up, wincing at the vicious pain between his eyes. He put a hand to his aching head and forced himself to his feet again. He must be getting old. His instincts should have warned him there was someone else there. He almost stumbled over the dead S-blocker and cursed briefly when he discovered what it was. The Lord Hydram was not going to be pleased at losing his new prototype on its first assignment, and Topaz was gone. Razor shrugged. He still had Mary. He heard the sound of approaching men and looked down the street to see a troop of Marines emerging from the mists, headed his way. They do to escort him back to the Defiant. And then the ship's mind techs would open Mary's mind up and scour it clean of anything they needed to know. Mary had been closeted with the city council in the Blackthorn Inn, and no doubt knew many useful things, including where the scattered council would reconvene. He took her by the arm and hustled her away. She went with him unresistingly. And if something trapped and horrified moved behind her staring eyes, no one saw it. Stalker and Hazel Dark fought on against impossible and overwhelming odds. Owen stood back to back with Hazel, cutting down all who came against him, fighting at the peak of his maze-born abilities, fast and strong and deadly beyond all human hesitations, and began to wonder if this time that would be enough. The Empire forces seemed limitless. Random and the rest of the small rebel force had been swept away in the tide of fighting, leaving Owen and Hazel to fight alone, as they had so many times before. And powerful as they were only two, and the Empire had an army. Marines came charging through the streets from all directions, endless waves of fighting men, driven on by orders and duty, and officers who'd shoot them if they turned away. They threw themselves at Owen and Hazel like the sea crashing against some stubborn rock on the seashore, and bit by bit, they wore the rock down. Owen and Hazel were burning themselves out, their own inhuman energies devouring them from within. They were too strong, too fast, and they demanded too much of their merely human bodies. Every muscle ached, every nerve screamed, and their lungs burned with the need for more and more air. Human bodies were never meant to take this kind of strain, this much punishment. The changes the maze had worked in them held them together, healing their wounds and keeping them on their feet and fighting long after they should have fallen to superior odds. But the strain of it was killing them bit by bit, and they both knew it. They weren't stupid. They would have turned and run if there'd been any avenue of escape, or anywhere to run to. But the Marines were all around them, and nowhere in Mistport was safe anymore. And so they fought on, beyond rage or anger now, reduced to the cold, necessary work of slaughter and survival. Dead bodies piled up around them, penning them in. Owen thought wistfully of the power he'd used against his father's old network, cleaning out their house by sheer force of will. But he couldn't feel that power within him anymore. He'd used it all up and more in the endless fighting. Even as armed men surged forward, clambering over the bodies of the fallen for a chance of the Death Stalker and his companion, Major Chevron arrived with still more troops. The last defenders of the north side had fallen before him, and he was sweeping toward the center of Mistport and certain victory, when his forces suddenly slowed to a halt. Unable to force a way through the bottleneck caused by Owen and Hazel's defiant stand, Chevron might have pulled his people back and sent them down other streets, but he couldn't, wouldn't do that once he saw who the problem was. Everyone had heard of the Death Stalker by now. Great rewards and greater privileges waited for the man who brought him down. Chevron urged his men on and waited patiently for his hounds to pull down the stags at bay. When Owen and his bitch went down, Chevron would then step forward and deliver the coup de grace himself, and that would be that. He would walk through the burning streets of Mistport in triumph, with the Death Stalker's head held high on a pike. And there would be no doubt in all eyes who was the real hero of the taking of Mistport. The sheer numbers forced Owen and Hazel back step by step until they had been contained in a back square with only the one exit, carefully blocked off by the advancing Marines. High stone walls overshadowed them on every side, and all that was left to Owen and Hazel was to stand and die. The Marines pressed forward, drunk on blood and death, and stoned to the eyeballs on designer battle drugs, not caring about the dead comrades they had to step over to get at their enemies. Owen Deathstalker and Hazel Dark fought side by side with failing strength, not feeling the wounds that soaked their clothes in blood. Chevron watched from the rear, scowling impatiently, and then signaled for two Marines to bring forward the portable disruptor cannon. It would be messier this way, but more certain. The two Marines pulled the cannon quickly into position, pointed it into the back square, and set about the warm-up sequences. They labored over the cannon, got it primed and ready, and looked inquiringly at Chevron. He yelled for his people to fall back and give the cannon a clear shot, but they didn't hear him, out of their heads on drugs and the scent of victory. Chevron called again, his voice almost shrill with anger as his men ignored him. And then he turned and nodded sharply. The two Marines manning the cannon looked at their fellow Marines before them, and then at each other. And then one hit the firing stud. The wide energy beam roared from the disruptor cannon, disintegrating everything directly before it. The Marines in its path were swept away like burning leaves in a gale. Owen and Hazel just had time to sense what was coming, and then the howling energy hit them. They brought up their psionic shields at the last moment, but there was no time, and the shields only slowed the deadly energy. It picked Hazel up and smashed her through the rear stone wall like a bullet from a gun. Owen threw himself to one side, and the energy beam just clipped him in passing. It slammed him against the left-hand wall with enough strength to crack the stonework from top to bottom. The beam snapped off, and he dropped almost senseless to the ground. Owen lay there for what seemed like ages. His whole left side was numb. He rolled slowly onto one side and tried to get his feet under him. His head hurt, and there was blood in his mouth.